Thank you. The format of this meeting is the speaker will share with us for 20 to 25 minutes, after which there will be a secretary's break. The meeting will then go to a show of hands until 9 to 5 p.m. Last 10 minutes are reserved for those who feel they may drink and haven't had the chance to share. And now to share her experience, strength, and hope with us, we have Anicia.
Hi, my name's Anicia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anicia.
I am, like, so happy to be up here. But before I start, I just want to say a little prayer so I can calm my nerves a little bit. Let the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart, be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. So, I called my sponsor before I was going to share, and she was like, don't whitewash your story. You like to look perfect a lot, and nobody likes that shit. And I was like, okay, that's cool. That's what I won't do. So I'm just going to share a little bit about, like, growing up, my drinking career, and the past year. My sobriety date is June 10th, 2014. So I just celebrated my anniversary here last week. So it's, like, really cool that I'm up here now. So I'm from the Midwest, the mid-Midwest, where, like, the Bible Belt meets the Rust Belt. So, like, you know, salt of the earth people. I'm from a Pentecostal family, like Holy Rollers, like that scene in the Blues Brothers. I've been in services like that, minus some of the acrobatics, but at that level, definitely. So that was my life. A big part of my childhood was spent in church. And I would say from an early age, I was plagued with this idea that I was somehow different than everyone, and I was somehow unequal, and that everyone else had access to this, like, stream of happiness that had somehow just been denied me. So I pretended that for a long time. Like, I was like, I have to be happy, I have to be the funniest, I have to be the smartest, but I never really felt equal to my peers the whole time growing up. So by the time I got to, like, the end of elementary school, going into middle school, which is a shitty time for anyone, whether you're an alcoholic or not, like, middle school sucks. Like, I just really latched on to this idea of being more pious than people and that making me better than them. Like, listen, like, I go to Bible study. I go to all the youth group activities. I started teaching my own Sunday school class when I was 13. Like, I was like, I don't give a fuck what else happens. Me and God are going to be tight because everyone else hates me. But if this dude, if I impress him somehow, then everything will be better. Then I'll be better than people, and I'll finally feel equal. If I feel better, then I'll feel equal. And everything was very black and white for me at that time. It was like I was either going to heaven and in God's Fave 5 on a cell phone, or I was like the shittiest person in the world and going to hell. That was it. And I looked at myself that way, and I looked at everyone else that way. Especially when I thought that I was living righteously, I was just like, well, I'm sorry. I don't think God would like what you're doing right now. Would God be pleased? Like, it's like, how the fuck would you know? But that was my attitude. And that was kind of like, because I was like, I'm not as smart as other people. I'm not as pretty as other people. But I am more righteous than all you motherfuckers. And that's going to be enough. So in high school, I, like, was really obsessed with, like, I was obsessed with alcohol before I even started to drink. I was always like, oh my God, Dare, if you drink and you smoke and you kiss boys, like, ugh, welcome to hell. Like, that was me. And it's such a shitty way to treat people, but that was my thinking. So alcohol was just like, if you do this, then I don't do this. So I am clearly better than you. So don't worry about it. We're equal because I'm better than you. So when I was in high school, I applied to all Christian schools, like the really strict ones where you couldn't be sitting on the same surface with a boy if both of your feet were up. It was a very strange rule. Like, you couldn't have DVDs that were PG-13. It was like, I applied to some crazy-ass places. And then I ended up going to the number two party school in the country, Ohio University, because they gave me the most money. And bitches are broke. So you gotta go where the money is. So my first year, I made sure, like, when I got on campus, I was like, I was still on my righteous shit. I was like, I'm going to be in all the church groups. And I spent every week, like those 30 weeks of school. Like Monday night was this Bible study, Tuesday night was this home group, Wednesday night was service, Thursday was another service, Friday we went to prayer. It was just like every day. And it's not bad to do those things. I just wasn't doing them with the right spirit. I wasn't doing them like, hey, like, God is awesome. I want to share God's love with everyone else. I'm like, God is awesome to me. And if you don't think of God the way that I think of him, I'm better than you. Don't worry about it. So by my sophomore year, I kind of just like, I went through that thing where I was just like, wait, is this shit even worth it? Like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, do I even believe all of this stuff that I'm doing? And at that point, I started doing like theater and like shows and stuff. So I had a lot of friends that drank, and I was still like, no, no, I'm not gonna drink. Like, that's not me. Like, I can still hang out with you guys. Like, it's okay. And my very first drink when I was in school, just someone like randomly was like, hey, you wanna come take shots in my room? And something inside of me was just like, okay. Like, and that was it. Those two shots, it was, it's so bad too. It was peppermint schnapps, you guys. Like, it wasn't even good shit. Like, I'm embarrassed. But that's what it was. And the feeling that I got when it, like, I call it the righteous burn. Like, when it was going down, that warm. And, like, there was always this, like, pit in the bottom of my stomach that just seemed, like, bottomless and just shit just kept getting thrown in and it would just grow and grow. But it was like when the fire from the liquor met it, it was just like, and I was like, oh, peppermint schnapps, yes. So after that, like, I was just like, you know, I'm just going to drink like everyone else. I'll just drink on the weekend. And I started just drinking on Friday and Saturday. And then I was like, I feel guilty because I'm drinking every Friday and Saturday. So my friend was like, well, it's okay to drink if we think of celebrations. So we started to look at, like, the fake calendars, and we would come up with themes for every night that we drank so I wouldn't feel guilty. I'm like, well, if I'm celebrating, like, Jesus turned water into wine, I can kind of justify it because I was still trying to be super holy and just living a crazy double life. So then it started, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then it was like, okay, thirsty Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, fun day. And I was like, okay. Thursday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Oh, well, Monday's karaoke night. Like, you can't sing karaoke sober. Like, who does that? And it just kind of spiraled from there. It went from me drinking two nights a week to me drinking every day. But it was never during class. I always drank it, you know, after hours. So I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink all day. Like, not a big deal. By my senior year in college, I was definitely, like, a very high-risk drinker. My last big binge in college was I had something called the 100 shot challenge at my house, where I poured 100 shots. Half of them were straight, the other half were 50-50, and I had 7 friends, and we tried to finish them all in 37 minutes. One of my friends fractured her ankle. Someone else wrecked their car. I woke up with my TV in my bed. Like, I was the big spoon for my TV. Like, it was so weird. And I didn't see a problem with it. I was just like, well, you know, sometimes you gotta cuddle your bed. Like, it needs love, too. My friend was in the hospital. She texted me, like, bro, like, I'm in the hospital. I'm like, what? Like, I don't know. Like, you want me to bring you some McDonald's? That was my response. Not like, oh, we shouldn't drink. Like, and the next night, we were like, well, we didn't finish all the shots. Let's finish them. Like, this isn't right. Like, you've got a cast on. You're already hurt. Like, it's okay. Like, let's keep going. And my alcoholism was just, like, nonstop. And I always like, was able to logic and reason through my drinking. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I'm okay. After I graduated, 2 weeks after I finished my last class, I moved to New York as an urban missionary for the Episcopal Church. I lived in a church in Harlem. And I was like, listen, college is over. I'm giving it all to my God, and, like, I'm not going to drink anymore. I made it 2 days through orientation before I was like, if I don't get a fucking drink, I'm going to murder all my roommates. But in my mind, it wasn't like that. I was just like, you know what? It would be so good if we just, like, bonded over some wine, you guys. Let's just break bread, okay? Let's have a communion right now. And really, I just wanted a reason to get fucked up and have everyone else around me getting fucked up. And it was during that time period that my drinking really moved from, like, being social in any way to being, like, me in my room alone drinking. Because my roommates were like, well, like, you know, like, we should be doing, like, service stuff for God. And I'm like, well, we can do it drunk, right? I don't know. So I started drinking a lot. and I caused a lot of havoc in that house. And looking back on it, I've been like, oh shit, like I didn't see it as that when I was doing it, and being really like uncooperative is a nice word. Really a cunt is what I was being, but uncooperative during that time period. But I was drinking my face off, but I was broke. So I couldn't drink that much. We were making like $200 a month, and we got a Metro card, and that was our missionary stipend because we were supposed to be living like in community with the people around us. By the time I got my real job after that internship year, I had a little something called disposable income, which was just drinkable income. And I actually went and had disposable income from my regular job and got a part-time job so I could do nothing but drink that money. And at that point, my drinking was just me going to work, getting drunk, and then it was like, oh, well, I should have a drink in the morning so I'm not hungover. Oh, by 11 o'clock, I'm starting to feel the burn. Let me go ahead and have another drink at lunch because they have a happy hour. Margaritas are only $3. That's cost effective. And I'm like, well, an alcoholic wouldn't be this logical. one of my friends kind of like put me on blast about it. Like, yeah, I think you're drinking too much. And I was like, you know, I put the fun in functioning alcoholic, so don't worry about it. Worry about yourself. And then I was just a shit show. So I started like, that got a little expensive. So I was like, well, listen, I'm going to add it to my budget because I'm an adult and I'm planning. So I had a line in my budget that literally said vice. And my vice budget was for marijuana, alcohol, and just other vices that one can find your way into in New York City. The budget line was $500 for vice. I always went over it. And I was like, well, let me just increase. I'll just increase it a little bit this month. Because it started at like $75. Then I was like, ugh, like, nah, it's not enough. I don't want to buy bottom shelf. Like, I need to treat myself. Like, I'm a lady. I can't be drinking bottom shelf shit, you know? So I was like, all right, let me move to the middle shelf. Because alcoholics don't drink from the middle shelf. Like, stop. So I started drinking that way. And then it was like, okay, well, my vice budget needs to grow a little bit. I also need to figure out how I can be drunk all the time, not because I have to, but because I want. At that point, I still thought that I wanted to be fucked up all the time. And at that point, my smoking really picked up because I was like, my stomach was rotting away from all the liquor, so I had to smoke in order to like calm my stomach so I could drink some more. By December of that first like real employment year, my weekends looked like me getting home, calling the weed man to deliver. And trying to just make sure I got to work on Monday. I would just kind of wake up in and out of blackouts, smoke some more, drink some more, get up, smoke some more, drink some more, get up, order food from Grubhub, have the person call me angry, like, I've been calling you for the last 30 minutes, where are you? I'm like, just bring it up the stairs. Like, oh my God, I already paid for it. So it was bad. And I still didn't think that I had a problem because I was like, I make it to work every day. I have a social life. Like, I did a play that year. I was like, it's not a big deal. Like, I'm doing what needs to get done. And I would say, like, my last big hurrah was when I went home for Christmas that year. And my family, like, they don't drink. They're holy rollers. They don't drink. And I needed to be fucked up constantly. And in New York City, you don't have to drive. But in Ohio, where I'm from, you got to get behind the wheel of a car to get anywhere. So I'm like, with my little brother, like, hey, like, you want me to teach you how to drive, buddy? Like, he's like, oh, you're going to let me drive? I'm like, yeah, you need to drive. Like, mom and dad let you do shit. Like, I love you. And, like, he took me one day, and it's the shittiest thing. He was, like, 16 or 17. He really didn't have a license. And it was snowing bad, and it was icing. And I was like, Lance, let's just drive to the gas station. I really need gas. I didn't need any fucking gas. I needed wine because I had depleted my supply. And we drove there, and I'm like, why don't you just stay in the car, keep it warm? I mean, I almost killed both of us because there's no reason. I shouldn't have had an unexperienced driver driving in the snow, but at that point, I didn't fucking care. Like, I needed to get drunk, and I didn't care, like, who it hurt. Like, I love my little brother to death, but it was more important for me to get that $3 boxed wine from UDF than it was for him to, like, live another year. And that's what my alcoholism did. It was destructive. It didn't give a fuck as long as it was drunk. And I had a huge falling out with my family. Like, literally none of my family members, like me and all my cousins went out to party the night before or two nights before Christmas. And nobody came over Christmas Day because apparently I had said horrible things that they just told me about, like, this past year. I had also knocked over the POS system at an IHOP and, like, taken a Christmas tree and, like, thrown it, like, a decorative Christmas tree. And then, like, they were calling the cops. And my sister, like, listen, this isn't New York City. Like, we have to live in this community. And I'm like, ugh. And they said the thing that I said to them in the car was, you guys are mad now, but this is going to be a good story. And at that point, my cousin had to, like, physically stop my sister from, like, killing me at that point. So my last day of drinking, June 9th, at that point I was drinking all day, every day. I would, you know, get up in the morning, blend up a nice tequila smoothie, and just, you know, I would get ready for the day, and I'd have a lunchbox. But this day, I was running late for some reason, and I was like, I'm running late. I should drive. So I hop in my car, but I forgot my go bag. Like, I didn't have any supplies, and I was sitting at this site doing a site visit, and I was like, I can't be here right now. Like, my mind was on this janky bottle of wine, this Gato Negro, this bottom shelf shit, right? And I was just like, if I don't get that Gato Negro inside of myself real quick, like, shit's about to go down. And I like rushed home to get it. And at that point, that's when I text my friend and was like, someone was in the rooms, and I was like, you know, I think I have a problem, because I didn't have a choice that I abandoned my post. I didn't tell my boss I was leaving. I just got up and left because I wanted an $8 bottle of wine. And it was worth losing my job. It was worth speeding on the highway. It was worth illegally parking. And I was like, I don't have a choice anymore. And at one of my first meetings, like, someone told me, you know, alcohol, it gave me wings and then it took the sky. And that's exactly what alcohol did for me. Like, it gave me freedom and power and equality and all those things that I always craved and wanted. And then it was just like, just kidding, this is all you have. It took the sky away. I couldn't fly. I couldn't do anything but get fucked up. So after I came to my first meeting, I know that I'm very blessed, because people, like, really took me under their wing, and they were so, like, so open. By my third day of sobriety, or maybe my fourth, I already had a sponsor. She invited me out for coffee, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so cool. She wants to get coffee with me. She was 12-stepping the fuck out of me, but I didn't know that then. And it was a kind of off from there. And I remember on my fifth day of sobriety is when I dumped out my entire stash. And as I was dumping, I dumped it into the bathtub, and my bathtub, like, had, like, hair in it, so it was clogged. And I, like, stood in the bathtub with the liquor, like, hoping that some of it would soak through my feet or something. And I was, like, crying, like, I had lost someone. And it was such a weird feeling, because here was this thing that was destroying my life, and I was dumping it out, and I was crying. And I text someone, and they were like, listen, just go in another room. You'll feel so much better once it's gone. And I was like, but I laid in my bed and I cried for a good, like, 45 minutes, like, and I really felt the loss, because I loved it, and I didn't know what life was going to look like without it, because that's what life had, my whole adult life, like, the 6-7 years, that's all it looked like, was drunk nights, was hangovers, was early mornings, and I didn't know what else there was, but there is a better way. So I started doing step work right away. So after, like, my first or second meeting, someone gave me a big book, and they were like, you know, don't read the stuff yet. Just read the stories in the back. See if you see yourself in them. And that was probably one of the best things that I ever did, because I tore through those stories in a couple of days, and I was like, shit, like, I didn't know other people felt this way. And by the time I started doing my step work, my mind was just, it was just blown apart. Right now I'm on my fourth step right now. I'm in the middle of it. I have been dragging ass on it, my fearless moral inventory. It has not been so fearless. It's been like a kicking and screaming moral inventory, but a sister's trying. But as far as, like, my experience with the steps, the most powerful thing I did, and I talked about it a little bit last week, was my sponsor asked me, what do I need God to be in order to stay sober? And for years, I kind of ascribed myself to this vision of God that was someone else's. And that God was judgmental, and he was punitive, And he didn't help me stay sober. Like, I would go to church drunk. I would go to church high. I would go singing praise and worship high. Like, but the new God of my understanding has been able to keep me sober for the past year and open up my life in a way that that I couldn't have imagined. Just turning my life over to something that was bigger than myself gave me this freedom that I had always craved. I finally got it. There's freedom in being able to give yourself over to something bigger. There's a space to make mistakes. There's a space to learn, a space to grow. And that's what I need. That's what I needed. So I think the most like powerful things that I have done this past year has just been to try to show up. Because showing up for me was always very hard, because unless there was liquor there, I didn't want to show up. Or unless somebody that I liked was there, I didn't want to show up. But now I can show up for the things that I don't... I can show up in places where I am of service, like where I'm not just taking away, where I am actually going to give. And that's something that I always wanted. I always wanted to be of service, but I was too self-centered and selfish. And I've learned to give from a place of, if I give nothing back, it doesn't matter because someone else needed it. And I think that's what service is. And I think that that's what God would have wanted me to do all along, but I couldn't see that. Sponsorship has been a very like important thing for my sobriety. Having someone to call, having other alcoholics in the room to call and to talk to, because sometimes you don't really like, you don't want any fancy advice. You just want to be like, "Yo, man, shit's fucked up," and you want someone to say like, "Yep, but you're gonna be all right." And like that's, and I get that, like, because like sometimes like my other, like they, like nobody in the rooms tries to fix me. They just want to give me suggestions, that they want me to allow God to help my life get bigger, or allow whatever my higher power is to help my life get bigger and better. And in the past year, I've seen my life turn from something that was so small to something that is huge, and to something that I didn't expect. Like, I had my life planned out. I thought I was going to just be drunk, and I was like, I'm just going to move to the mountains and, like, I don't know, maybe be killed by squirrels in a couple years, drunk on moonshine. Like, that was my life plan, but my life is so much bigger than that now. The opportunities that have opened themselves up have just been amazing. And I'm just very grateful to be in these rooms and to be able to share myself and to grow as a sober woman of dignity and grace with all of you. So thank you.
My name is Sam. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sam.
Welcome to Never Had a Legal Drink. Due to increased expenses, we passed the baskets twice in order to meet our 7th tradition responsibilities, such as rent, literature, and contributions to AA service bodies. Madam Treasurer, have we met our expenses this evening? Wait, is there anyone here for the first time? Or is it a matter of time that I'd like to say hello?